Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker on June the 10th, 2014. And we've got working on, I think, a full moon, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show and any other donations you'd like to send along. And then go up to resist.com and get educated, man. Get educated. It's overcast here in the Midwest today, but warm and nice. It's pleasant. Almost no wind at all. And so, not bad. Well, I see these two idiots out there in Las Vegas blew away a couple of pretty nice looking Aryan cops. I hadn't seen the cops or pictures of the cops before, but you see, the problem is we have lone wolf cops. And if you just start shooting like crazy, you're liable to shoot our lone wolf cops. So the best way to do with cops is just ID the bad ones. Just ID them, and, I don't think it pays to go out and blow them away, but sometimes you can get a little even with bad cops that treat white working people badly, that don't deserve it, you know, like we did in Phoenix years ago. Phoenix cops were leaning on our people. And all they were doing was standing on the corner handing out literature. So I let the Phoenix Police Department know that we had the goods on all the bad boys in the department, because we got the information from the street girls, the prostitutes on the street, of who was dirty. You guys keep pushing our people around, your wives are going to find out exactly what you're doing when you should be home. Those are the kinds of things that work. You don't have to go crazy and shoot people. I've used things like that a lot of times. But here's another product of the right wing, these two people. I mean, they're incoherent. They're just totally out of control and psychopathic. And they're going to start a revolution by shooting two cops at a donut shop. And I believe the third guy they killed was just a guy that was trying to stop him. He might have been white too. Well, I don't know what to say, except you know that anybody who believes in the racial idea takes the blame for all this kind of stuff. I did an interview with a lady from the Kansas City Star yesterday, and of course she asked me some of these usual questions. What do you say? Well, you say we don't support the right wing, and they're not getting educated properly, and they're going out and doing crazy things that have nothing to do with advancing the white race. And that's the problem. Whoever's triggering these people, whoever's talking to them on the side, is getting them fired up with this kind of stuff, winding them up, turning them loose. And I say it's probably feds. Or maybe even locals. I don't know. But I sure don't do it. You know I don't do it. And I don't propagandize other people to do it. I believe in being a firm white racist separatist, yeah. But that's one thing. And then going bananas, like Glenn did down there in Missouri. Must be something in the water. I don't know what these people are drinking or eating, but it's driving them crazy. So anyhow, we'll just have to put up with it, because you know we'll get all the blame no matter what happens. That's the way it's set up. But like this gal asked me yesterday, one thing I learned to do, she said, Well, what about the Holocaust? I said, well, I leave that up to other people, mathematicians and so forth, and researchers. My total research is to find out how many billions of dollars the Jews have ripped off our race from, and how many wars they've gotten us into. That's where my research is at. I'll leave the research on the so-called 6 million to you people. She didn't have much to say to that. You notice how Christians always have a way out of everything. They can sidestep anything. Well, evidently, this shooting hero up in Seattle Pacific, John Mize, made this statement. I would encourage that hate be met with love. When I came face to face with the attacker, God gave me the eyes to see that he was not a faceless monster, but a very sad and troubled young man. While I cannot at this time find it within me to forgive his crime, well, how do you separate the crime from him? I truly desire that he will find the grace of God and forgiveness. Let's see here. Wait a minute, I lost it. Oh, Lord. While I cannot at this time find it within me to forgive his crime, I truly desire that he will find the grace of God and forgiveness of our community. Unquote. And everybody says, what a guy, what a guy. Oh, man, it gets so deep, you can't get above it. Christians are the greatest double talkers I've ever met. And these are the same people that if they get their ass in an uproar, they'll get a mob going and hang you from a tree. Believe me, they will. But after you're dead, they'll say, well, God bless his soul. We hope he doesn't go to the lake of fire. Now, I caught this whacked out preacher, and I think he's from Herbert Armstrong's group that were quite popular years ago out on the West Coast until Garner Ted Armstrong, the old man's son, got caught in bed with one of the parishioners, and he lost a lot of juice. Now, there's a guy, he says the Nazis, they didn't go away. They didn't go away after World War II, those leaders. They're still there. Now listen to this.
Where did they go? What happened to them? Well, I'll tell you, that's a fascinating part of our history that you need to understand, because the Bible says they're coming back. That is, that spirit is coming back. Notice what it says in verse 9. And here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is. That's when Mr. Armstrong came on the scene. And when Adolf Hitler came on the scene, Herbert Armstrong, of course, the founder of this church years ago. It says here, and the other is not yet come. There's another head that is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. So he's going to only continue just a short space, a 3.5 years. And then, believe it or not, he's going to come face to face with Jesus Christ himself. And Jesus Christ is going to stop that murderous machine forever. But when you look at, you see again at what happened to that crown after Hitler lost the war, they took it back to Vienna. It is there today. But they're using it again to try to inspire a unity in Europe. Trying to inspire a unity in Europe. And then they say, well, revive your roots and look back at your heritage. That glorious past they talk about. But what is glorious about it? And are they sure it's glorious? Now, those people, those many thousands and millions of people that were killed by that machine didn't think it was glorious. I think we all need to look at that history, and some we better begin to face some reality here. After all, these are this is the real historical facts. This is not something that I'm
Well, he's got the whole ball of wax. Those National Socialists never died. They're out there. They're coming back. They're coming back to fight the baby Jesus. He's got the facts. He got it right out of that book. You can get anything out of that book. It's sort of like the Sears catalog of anything. I'm telling you, man, better get ready. The Third Reich is coming back. I think it's going to be three and a half Reich. Well, you can't knock it. These guys live pretty nice. They got big houses and big cars and vacation and speak all over the world, give a little talk out of the Bible, and they stuff money in their pockets. Yeah, it's a good, they might as well con these sheep. Now, you remember that book, that National Alliance book, I forget the title now, but in that book, the underground, the Aryan underground, sets up a preacher who becomes a very, very powerful, well-known preacher around the country, and he brings in all kinds of money for the racial underground, which I thought was a good idea. If you're going to con these people, you might as well use it for a good thing, right? If I had a half a dozen guys like that that could play that game, put them in different places around the country, pretty soon we'd have quite a war chest. But don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. Trying to get people to do anything is a real tough possibility. I couldn't do it. I could not look in the eyes of these sheep and take their money like these guys do. Take a special kind of person. That's why I think David Duke missed his calling. He should have been a major evangelical guy, like this guy from out west that's on TV. 20,000-30,000 people. Skinny guy. He got his ass in trouble a while back. A couple, 3 years. Olmsted, something like that. Boy, does he have a pitch. Every once in a while, I turn across the dial and he comes up, and man, has he got a pitch. Now, if David Duke would have done that, hell, at least he'd be rolling in dough. Incidentally, in case you're interested, Pope Francis is sicky poo today. Yeah, and nobody's talking. But maybe he slept with his nose in a crack. I don't know. What the hell do I know? Well, here's a little bit of eavesdropping on the federal marshals the other day on a special TV thing. They've written a book about how great they are. So here's a little clip.
In their car and a little hat or whatever so they can knock on a door and say pizza. I've spoken to lots of people who have done all different kinds of things like that to gain entry to a place. But one area that a lot of people know about but don't know that the marshals are involved, that the marshals are actually doing it, are sting operations. And the marshals set these things up. And the classic one, but they all have a similar basis.
Nigger operations.
they were holding a big party. There was a big contest, and the winner of the contest would get tickets to the Super Bowl. And I will let these guys tell that story.
Yeah, I actually worked it. It was actually X amount of season tickets to the Redskins. Okay, at that time, Redskins were going to the Super Bowl.
You're in Giants territory.
Yeah. I'm a Giant fan. At that time, Redskins were going to the Super Bowl. It was big, so they held it in an auditorium, sent out letters to all last known fugitive addresses, said you must appear in person, you have to have positive ID. You not only have a X amount of chance to win Redskins tickets, but the grand prize is to win tickets to the Super Bowl. So anyway, and if you need your transportation, call this outfit and we'll come pick you up. So we had coverage from every way possible at the it was at the Coliseum, and they had, the marshals were dressed up in tuxes, and we had the chickens, and we had the cheerleaders there. We had the whole nine yards to make it all look right. And so they'd come in, check in, have to show valid ID. As soon as they show, they said, you've won tickets, you got an opportunity, go through that door. So they, and go sit back there. So once they got 100-something people that were back there and eliminated all the others, then our special operation groups, our SWAT teams, take everybody down, and we arrested every one of them. And the complaints were always, that's false advertising on your part. You can't do that.
So, a couple people asked, do they still get taken?
Right? Yeah, can I still get taken? How about my, can my family get to take? And they don't. We, in the book, there's a lot of scams that people just,
you know,
trips to Atlantic City. The element of greed within that element of society will lure out a lot of people. And it's just, what do they want? You know, not only money, but something else. So there's been a lot of scams. I think five or six different people just told of a scam that they invented and, you know, arrested 15, 20 people without anything being dangerous at all.
You know, the one of the final things I want to talk about is that, and again, all of this is in the book. Under Mike's supervision, the Marshals instituted a program that affected Lenny and Lenny's group called Operation Falcon. And I, when I first heard about this, I couldn't believe it. I started referring to it as Hell Week for criminals, because what it is the entire Marshal Service takes a week, and during that week, they are going to arrest as many bad guys, really bad guys, as possible in 1 week. It's all resources, all in, and the last Operation Falcon ended up with
37,000 fugitive arrests that week. What we did was nationwide, the regional task forces such as Lenny runs and these other six just like him, they operate at a high pace with a lot of personnel from agencies collectively. What we saw was that all these district task forces, they wanted to do these little one-week operations, and they were averaging around 100 arrests, you know, during their week, and in headquarters, I'd fund them for that week. And so then we came up with the idea that we do it nationwide and have everybody involved and get. And our estimate was cost us about $900,000 for 97 task forces to operate for that week, overtime, administrative costs, and whatnot. Bring in as many state and locals that were not already involved, and go see what we could do during that week. Set a high criteria of violence, and let's see what we can accomplish. What it led to was over, and before the arrest statistics, we had over 3,000 law enforcement agencies working with us that week. That is the largest operation ever in the history, and still to this day in the history of the United States. We had over 7,000 law enforcement officers working. They arrested in 1 week over 30,000 fugitives, 1,000 murderers that week, 15,000 sex offenders that week. I think we figured out the average cost per arrest was around $33. We were able to take that to Congress and say, I think this is money well spent. It was not a bad thing to invest it in. So that, now on Lenny and the task forces that do that every day anyway, it was somewhat of a burden on you guys.
Yeah. Now, we understood, believe me, it's a national effort, a nationwide effort on behalf of the agency and all of its task force members and whatnot. So, yeah, it's something we do every day. All right, you're right, Mike.
Yeah.
You know, it was good stuff. Falcon, federal and local cops organized nationally.
That's good. That's you got that.
And I wasn't even part of it. See that?
Good.
The last story I want to tell, and if there's any questions.
Yeah, some questions.
I think, and we've used this because I think it sums up the Marshal Service. And again, as a writer, I think this is the great untold story of law enforcement in America. We all watch TV. We all know, you know, this Justified, this is that. There is no one who knows, and I mean no one, who knows the success of the Marshal Service, the statistics, the numbers, it's extraordinary. And there's a story we tell in the book about a marshal attending the retirement party for a good friend of his who was an FBI agent who was retiring after 22 years. And the marshal said to his friend, "How many times have you drawn your weapon in those 22 years?" And the FBI agent said proudly, as he should have, "I've never had to draw my weapon." And then he said to the marshal, "How often have you drawn yours?" And the marshal looked at him and says, I'll draw my gun 7 times before lunch." And I think that really sums it up. Are there questions from anyone?
Well, you mentioned Justified, which is probably one of my favorite shows, but I was wondering, allowing for the inevitable exaggeration from Hollywood, what do you think of the authenticity of that show?
I can say this because I know who the technical advisor is, which is a former deputy marshal. I also know there's a story or two in the book by a deputy who actually did the case that is being reenacted on the TV show. So you have that part of it.
You can tell them the case because it's one of my favorites.
It's a still one. It was on not too long ago where Raylan, the character on Justified, goes in and he's going after this guy to arrest him. He's a one-legged guy and he jumps out a window and gets away and stuff. Well, this actually happened in Los Angeles to a group of deputy marshals. They were on, the fourth floor of an apartment, and they knew the guy had one leg, so they weren't really worrying about him getting out the back. Well, he got out the back because there was a tree out there. He jumped onto it, slid down, put on the leg and took off. So, you know, there are those that are, but yeah, there's sensationalism in any of that. And any of you.
Hey, here's how dumb I am. I was at a function last night. My wife's laughing because she was with me. And the woman that was in Justified, what's her name, Ellie? I don't remember. She played, I've watched one episode.
Mike told that was on Justified this year about the computer genius who threw his leg out the window and shimmied down. When that happened, the marshal, all the deputies started to run out to catch him. And the guy running the operation said, no, wait a second. And they said, well, why? He said, when you go home tonight, what's going to be a better story? That you caught another felon or a one-legged guy scampered out the fourth floor window of an apartment building and put his leg on and ran away.
Ran away.
He said, we'll get him. We'll get him in a couple of days. But let him. He's earned the right to run for a couple of days. And he was not a violent felon. So. Yeah,
I do have another one. Occasionally on the show, they'll show some hostility between the FBI and the Marshal Service. Usually the FBI is more overbearing or arrogant. They're usually the bad guys. I was wondering if there was ever any instances like that. You don't have to name anything.
Go ahead.
One of you should ask that.
There's always friendly competition, a little disagreement. The bottom line, it used to be worse. September 11, 2001. Their mission changed. Our mission changed. We took over all this. Our paths don't cross but a couple times a year. When I was in headquarters, if I got a call from my counterpart at the Bureau, I knew we had one of these incidents. So we would basically try to just work it out best you can and hope that the marshals would hurry up and catch the guy and I'd eliminate that. Information sharing is always tough. You know, a lot of people, we're different. We're not trying to make cases on people. We're not trying to collect a ton of evidence. We hit a house and it's got a load of stash and drug money in it. We're going to call the DEA. Got a bunch of guns. We're going to call ATF. We're not territorial or any of that. So we have a little bit different. But yeah, there's some of that. And, there's a ton of good agents out there. So,
I'm going to interrupt Mike and I'm going to tell a little story out of school that predates 9/11. And this is Mike getting involved with the FBI. And there was a neo-Nazi was wanted for murder in Germany. Was hiding out at a Aryan compound in West Virginia, and a group of marshals who decided went into the town disguised as good old boys there for a fishing trip, and at the same time a group of FBI agents looking quite official came into the town. And they ended up trying to find a way to work this out, because the FBI wanted the Marshal Service out of there because they had an informer inside. And they had a big meeting, and this FBI agent kept waving his file around about their informant. And Mike, being Mike, tried very hard to find common ground. And the agents really apparently weren't that interested in that. And they said, wait a second, we got to talk this out. And they left the room, and he left his file sitting on the desk. And they came back in, and the FBI agent, being very officious, started talking about how this was an FBI operation, and they had a secret informer inside that no one could know about. And with that, Mike reached into his shirt, pulled the photograph out that he had taken out of the folder, and said, "You mean this guy?" So,
we knew who their source was, and anyway, we did arrest the guy off the compound. We did not want another wake up, and that's what we did not. We arrested him away by himself. So, it's just, well, you have those on cases, and you try your best to work it out mutually. Just sometimes you can't.
You know, the converse side of that is Lenny being on the ground and commanding officers from 90 different law enforcement agencies. These are people, you know, Mount Vernon Police Department.
Well, there you go, a little bit of eavesdropping in plain sight of the federal marshals, who are pretty braggadocious, but that's all right. But about the National Alliance compound, I'm not sure whether they identified that informant or not. But I'm sure it wouldn't have been that hard to do at the time. So anyhow, so they come to town with their whole crew of federal marshals and FBI to get one guy? Texas Rangers said one riot, one ranger. One desperado, one Texas Ranger. These guys need a whole bunch of them. Now ask yourself this, boys and girls, about that particular situation. A man's on the run out of Europe on a fairly serious charge. Why would Dr. Pierce let him on the property? I mean, he might have wanted to do it and wanted to help the guy, but knowing that he was putting himself in a very tenuous situation, who could have had federal charges against him, why would he do that? And when they say there was one informant on the inside, don't kid yourself, there were at least two. And let me tell you another thing. For you old suspicious people like old Tommy, I believe the informant was at the very top and had been at the top for quite a long time. And I think that he might have been developed as an asset about the time the order was on the run. That's all I'm going to say about the subject, because I don't have the proof. I don't have the evidence, but I have my suspicions. I don't know whether you're... know this guy, Jeremy Renner, who's being pushed in Hollywood now. He just got an award at Vanity Fair Academy Awards. He did a movie called, it was a neo-Nazi movie, Skinhead, who was admitted to a psychiatric hospital. He plays opposite Gabriel Union. I don't know what the title of that was, but he's got another one coming on called Kill the Messenger, coming on in the fall. Little weak people playing big guys, you know. Jeremy Renner. I wonder if he's a Jew. I don't think so. Maybe. Here's sort of a jokey news story if you read between the lines. How Brussels elite was stunned by a flurry of right and left hooks from disgruntled Europeans. There's never been a night like it, Early on Sunday evening, even before the last polls had closed, the first tremors were shaking the pillars of European power. Right. Ho-hum. Then came the full force of the earthquake. And by the time the dust had settled, it was clear that something had fundamentally changed at the heart of Europe's body politic. This guy should write for crime movies. In Britain, the headlines belonged to UKIP for more than a century. No party other than the Conservatives or Labour had won a national election. But on Sunday, Nigel Farage's little band of rebels turned history on his head, topping the polls with almost 28% of the vote. Well, they are doomed. The ruling class are going to come down on them like a ton of bricks. The Golden Dawn got 10%. They'll let them go for a little while longer before the bricks fall on their head. Sorry, boys, I know that pisses off a lot of you guys, or at least a lot of the right wing. But I've been at this for a long time, man. I know how it works. So they got this so-called right wing on the move all over Europe. Run for your lives, man. Well, I see the Jews are getting comfortable talking about leaving the EU. Don't lose any sleep over this stuff, boys. It's all a charade. Well, let's see what the response of the Jews was to this outbreak of right-wingism and the fascists are coming. And this is from The Economist, you know, that magazine that tells you all about what the hell's happening with the money, and you should follow the money, like I always say. For many Jews, it was a weekend of double horror in the Brussels. On May 24th, a gunman entered the Jewish Museum in Sablon and opened fire with a Kalashnikov, killing four people. Well, that's while the same period of time the Jews were knocking off Palestinians and our troops were knocking off who knows how many Afghans. So what's four people? Four people is nothing, unless you're one of the four. The next day, the first results of the European elections flashed up on a giant screen, showing that far-right parties, they're never far left, including avowed neo-Nazis, had scored big electoral victories. Oh my God, run for your lives, they're coming. To some, the events seemed connected. Europe was reverting to an ugly old ideologies. And shooting was proof. The shooting was proof. Four people? Hell, there's 20 people get shot on Saturday night in Chicago. If it were needed, the Europe is no longer safe for Jews. Well, you're more in danger from the Islamics that you have spread this liberal immigration crap all over the world, and now it's coming back to kick your ass, Jaime. Israeli leaders said the killings were the result of constant incitement against the Jewish state. Now, I think it's for what the Jews are doing. Not so much incitement. Yeah, sure, there's incitement, but they never want to admit there's anything they do that's causing this. Well, us? Controlling the money, controlling banks, corruption and everything else? Not us. Abrahamic people. An American journalist, Jeffrey Goldberg, caused a stir with a tweet. Quote, "At what point do Jews of America and the Jews of Israel tell the Jews of Europe that it might be time to get out?" Well, Mark Kahane told you that 25 years ago. Long time ago. Too many European Jews, the idea is preposterous. Us? Leave Europe? Whoa, we know a good thing when we got it. We ain't going to leave this shit alone. Yet thoughts of leaving are not far below the surface. Where do you think they're going? Well, some may go to Israel, but I'll bet you most of them come to the United States. Returning to the Promised Land is at the heart of the Jewish tradition in modern Zionism, which is bullshit, really. and most of the Jews, but, well, they're stupid Jews too. A survey last year by the European Union's Fundamental Rights Agency showed that, remember, boys and girls, forget the word rights. Don't use it. It's a trap. It means nothing. A survey last year of European Union's Fundamental Privileges Agency showed that nearly a third of Jews had considered leaving in the previous 5 years because they did not feel safe. Well, I know people saying all the time they feel like leaving the United States, but they don't. Some do. I think there's about 100 to 150,000 people a year immigrate out. I see these guys selling real estate in all these Central American, South American countries. And they have these pretty wives, and everything's just going to be peachy. We'll live in this tropical paradise. They have no idea what could happen at any moment. They're paying fortunes for these houses in Central and South America. Anything could happen. The government can fall. Revolution can start. But I watch them. They're totally oblivious. Well, we didn't like the hustle and bustle of New York, so we're going down to El Salvador or someplace. It'll be wonderful. Nobody will bother us down there. Dumbasses. For years, there has been a particular worry about France. Well, everybody worries about France. Home both to Europe's biggest Jewish community, there you go, to its largest Muslim minority. That makes for a good combination. The controversy over the performance by comedian Duodan, who happens to be a Negroid, and his popularization of the quenelle gesture, supposedly a modified Nazi salute, stokes belief in the entrenched hatred of the Jews. Got to go to a Negro to develop a new arm signal. French criticism of Israeli government plus an EU-wide campaign for boycotts of products from Jewish settlements. That's not going to hurt the Jews that much. Making little shit things in the settlements has led, well, they do probably have a few factories there, has led some to argue that anti-Zionism is a hidden form of anti-Jewism. Of course it is. You got it right. You got it right. I could have told you that a long time ago. Of course it is. The success of the National Front right-wing party came first in the European election is a new cause for concern. It's part of a wider surge across Europe, including the election of neo-Nazis in Greece, Hungary, and even Germany. You know, they get 5 or 10%. I told you, till they get to 20%, the bells and buzzers don't go off. I think the bells and buzzers have gone off in England. Because I think that, did I read there, 25%? Now the shit's going to hit the fan. Israel's Jewish agency says that there has been a fourfold increase in the number of French Jews immigrating to Israel in the past quarter of this year. Guess who's coming to the neighborhood? French Jews. I think I'd move over into the Palestinian area compared with the same period last year. French is often heard in the fashionable districts of Tel Aviv. Yeah, they come down there with a bunch of money. How much of this flow is attributed to fear of anti-Jewism and how much to the economic stagnation of France? It's hard to judge. Many French citizens, Jewish and non-Jewish, are abroad, not least in London. They run over to London. The killing of children at a Jewish school in Toulouse in 2012 was horrifying. Well, what about all the kids that are murdered on the streets of Chicago, New York, L.A., San Francisco, down there in Central America where it's epidemic, Mexico City? You mean a couple of Jews got killed, Jew kids got killed, and the whole world comes apart. The attacker, Muhammad Mirah, who died in a shootout with police, had much in common with the Mehdi Namush, the presumed attacker of the Jewish Museum in Brussels, who was arrested in Marseille during a customs check. Both were young men from North Africa, extraction, with a history of petty crime, who seemed to have been radicalized in jail. Well, that's what I say. The jails and prisons are where the revolutionaries come from. And were in touch with jihadists abroad, the first in Afghanistan, the second in Syria. For Europe's intelligence agencies, which I sure wouldn't want to be a part of, what a mess, and security forces, the Brussels attack confirms their worst fears of the threat posed by young European Muslims who are fighting in Syria. Many will no doubt come home. Some might continue to commit violent acts and even try to kill Jews. Synagogues and Jewish schools across Europe have received extra protection. I guess they give everybody a pack of rubbers. Whoa, wait a minute, Billy. Some people stay away from obvious Jewish targets. Hebrew speakers consider switching language when talking in public. Well, they should speak the language of the country they're in, unless they're trying to keep something secret. Even if Jews have not left Europe, argues Daniel Schwamenthal of the American Jewish Committee, some have already immigrated from their communities. There was a time when the new Europe opening after the Berlin Wall seemed to augur a golden age for European Jews. Jewish life was restored where it had been extinguished, and expanding borders of a post-national Europe offered a new opportunities to Jews scattered across the borders. Yeah, that's why they like open borders. Of course they like open borders. That's why they're all for no immigration control in every country, so they can move their booty across borders and move their crooked brother-in-law across too. Plainly, nationalism is reasserting itself. And lingering anti-Jewism of the old Christian-based sort is now mixed with radical Islamism among disenchanted Muslims. Wow. Yet, worrying as such changes are, they may not be a signal for Jews to pack up and leave. The United States will send all kinds of troops to protect you. To state the obvious, anti-Semitism or anti-Jewism in Europe is not sponsored by governments, and there are no organized pogroms or Nuremberg laws. Berlin boasts of the world's fastest-growing Jew community. Jews are free to stay or leave. Moving to Israel may fulfill a religious, cultural, and political need for many Jews, but it is not safer than staying in Europe. I watched a movie made in 1955 last night, a black and white movie. It was about a movie star who had been big during the Third Reich, but obviously after the Third Reich fell, she was out of favor and she was having a hell of a time and all that. Well, the point was she had a psychiatrist. Now, this wasn't 1955. This would have been, you know, not long after the fall in 1945. And guess who the psychiatrist was? Dr. Katz. This woman, Dr. Katz. And then one of the people she was buying antiques from and so forth had a big shop with all this stuff. They were Jews, too. And the Jew psychiatrist had a nigger from the American Army staying there, and he was going back in and stealing all the drugs and the morphine from the military and bringing it back to her, and she was getting all these people high on morphine and hooked on morphine. I thought it was pretty bold for a movie being 1955, that's only 10 years after the war, that they would show this no good nigger and these no good Jews that were killing people, and the people they were killing were all Aryan, blonde-haired type people. So, you never know. Moreover, let's see, where am I at here? if new populist parties have done well, it is in part because many have worked hard to detoxify themselves. Where Jean-Marie Le Pen would talk of the gas chambers as a detail of history, his daughter Marine now calls the Holocaust the height of barbarity. The populist anger is directed much more against Muslims than against Jews. The Le Pens, you know, some of these right-wing leaders in this country went gaga over Le Pen. Dr. Pierce was one of them. They go over there and wine and dine with those guys. Yeah, right. Madame Le Pen is using Muslims in her campaign. Come on, wake up and smell the coffee. She's actually, in this campaign, used Muslims working it door to door for the campaign. And instead of saying about the Holocaust, I don't know. Whatever you want it to be, just don't bother me. Or I don't care. Oh, no, you can't say that. Anyhow, if this is all an attempt to hide old-style anti-Jewism, the image scrubbing has been helpful by some Israeli and American Jewish groups. The likes of Party for Freedom in the Netherlands, Liners in Israel. Even as Jewish groups in their countries have at times sought to isolate them. And what of the jihadist killers? The threat is real, but it can strike Gentiles as well as Jews, whether in Europe or America. Yeah, they're running all over America. The European political model may be fraying, but it still tries to maintain open and tolerant societies. Whatever that means. The EU, though in need of reform, seeks the same across the continent. Such ideals as worth defending, including the right to dissent and to criticize Israel. The protection of Jews is an important test of Europe's democracy, as is the treatment of other law-abiding minorities, including Muslims. This is all whistling past the graveyard. You know that, don't you? Should the spirit of tolerance ever disappear, Jews may not be the only ones to leave Europe. Well, maybe the white non-Jews, it's time for them to leave. Where are they going to go? Maybe they can trade France for some black country down there and just say, look, all you Negroes, you go up to France and we'll take over your country. And then leave us alone. Leave us alone. Maybe not France, but England. I mean, Jesus, it's like a floating menagerie from wall to wall with wogs. And they're still saying, well, we're going to vote and get rid of this stuff. Shit, you ain't got to get rid of stuff by voting. You're going to get rid of it by picking up a cudgel like Ben Franklin used to talk about and start swinging the son of a bitch instead of parading around starting funny little parties. You know, this story reminded me of all this technology report. You know, a lot of people say everything is technology. We can solve any problem with technology. But this is an interesting article. During a morning operation against the Taliban in Afghan's Helmand province in 2010, a British Army contingent halted before a narrow pass reckoned to be mined with improvised explosive device. The day before, two of the unit's armored vehicles had been destroyed nearby by IEDs, and the crews were uninjured. The commander, Lieutenant Colonel Matt Bazili, fired a rocket that pulled 200 meters of a fat coiled hose out over the route ahead. Packed with about 1.5 tons of explosive, it detonated upon landing with such force that the shock wave was felt at a command center 13 kilometers away. Well, that's the technology. Python, as the mining system it's called, is so powerful that before it is fired, soldiers must ensure no civilians are within a half a mile on that morning a B-2 bomber and a drone first scanned the area. You realize how much all this costs? Other methods used to detonate IEDs and landmines, such as armored machines that flail the ground or sift through it like a potato harvester, are less violent. But setting off buried mines is an option. When conflict ceases and the civilians return to resume their daily lives, mine breaching alone cannot ensure the land is clear of unexploded remnants of war. Scattered shrapnel and explosive residues make it difficult to confirm that no mines remain. Mines may survive blasts, and some are designed to do so. For example, the MAT-5 and the Valmara 69, Italian anti-tank and anti-personnel mines, are detonated by the momentary sustained pressure from a passing vehicle or a foot. This means that there is often no doubt but to resort to the laborious and dangerous process of clearing the mines manually. Well, let's look a little farther in this article. Now, this article goes through with all these expensive methods they're using to detect mines. I mean, they're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for this equipment. I mean, you know, who cares? You know, American taxpayer, forget about it. He don't care. He's going to pay up. But let's go a little farther in this article. This is the one Tommy likes. Bees can be trained to associate the whiff of explosives with food, but they can be hard to track. Rats, however, are more controllable. Dozens of giant pouched rats tethered by D-miners are used to sniff out landmines in Mozambique. Teaching a rat to scratch the ground upon smelling explosives costs around 6,000 pounds, which is only a third of what it costs to train a dog, according to APAPO, a Belgium NGO that runs such a program. A rat can reliably check the ground faster than a human with a metal detector, says Zacharias Chambi, an APAPO D-miner who uses rats in Mozambique, the Tet province. Not one rat has made a mistake that has led to an accident, he adds. The Papo's rats have recently started working in Angola and are expected to begin this year in Cambodia. Well, they're going to have to knock that off because these American arms makers, they just can't make any money. If you do things like that that work very well and very sensible, you got to get rid of that shit. Many of the new high-tech solutions are likely to remain beyond the financial reach of some civilian mine-clearing operations, at least until the prices go down. Yeah, of course. These damn American arms companies and Israeli arms companies, they want to sell all this shit, man. You're bringing rats around? You got to go goddamn mine. Rats are cheap. Yeah. Meanwhile, the job will continue to be done largely by hand with some improved kits and assistance of well-trained animals. Further into the future, a clever robot that is dexterous enough to unearth and carry away landmines may well be developed. You know, at a cost of $250,000 per robot, of course. No, probably $500,000. That's all right. Americans, you have plenty money. You have plenty money. You borrow from China man. I loan you money. I'm China man. You pay interest. But until then, one of the most dangerous jobs in the world is a long way from being automated. Well, this shows a picture in The Economist of these rats. And they put harnesses on them like you do a small dog. We've got one small dog here, and he's got a harness on. It looks the same. And then they tie him to another simple apparatus, and they go across the field, and the rat smells the damn mine. Now, wait a minute. These are niggers. These are Negroes figured this out. At least on the surface, it's the Negroes that figured it out. Because they don't have the money to buy all that expensive made-in-China stuff, you know? So you got to give the some blacks some respect there, man. They've learned how to get rid of those damn mines on the cheap. Yeah. Well, I got to keep moving along here. I got all kinds of news. Just a minute here. I remember when D.C. Wolf was talking about TrueCrypt, that was such a great program, and it was at the time. Tales from the TrueCrypt, when the about-to-be former spy Edward Snowden leaked a huge cache of top-secret documents to the press in May 2013, it confirmed what computer security researchers had long nervously joked about, that Western intelligence services, and especially America's National Security Agency, are in the business of subtly nobbling the cryptographic software that secures computers all over the world. Mr. Snowden's documents name many big hardware and software firms as working with the spies, including the likes of Microsoft, Apple, and Intel. Fortunately for those with something to hide, there are alternatives to big American firms. A popular one is TrueCrypt, a piece of software which lets its user scramble the contents of their computers in a way that means anyone who does not know the password will only receive a stream of gibberish. Or that is what it used to be due. On May 29th, TrueCrypt's website, and I think I mentioned this before, was updated with a brief cryptic message. It warned that using TrueCrypt is not secure as it may contain unfixed security issues, unquote. A new version was released that was incapable of encrypting anything. It exists only to help users recover encrypted files. The announcement caused plenty of raised eyebrows. TrueCrypt had been in the development by a group of anonymous programmers for 10 years and was popular with anyone with security-conscious lawyers to journalists with sources to protect and dissidents in countries where too much complaining can land you in prison or worse. It is an open source, meaning its code is frequently available for anyone to look at. Mr. Snowden's revelations had boosted its popularity still further. But that's not going to work now. Stay away from any of that stuff. Just be careful. Don't talk. Don't put shit on the internet at all. I mean, you know, if you need to talk to somebody, talk to them in person, you know. Years ago, the son of a U.S. admiral, who was a very good friend of mine, he's dead now, and he was sharp. He had a method of using a deck of cards to create a code that whenever you met someone that you wanted to be able to reach them by code with these cards, you would reshuffle a deck and redo it. And I forgot how to do that. But it seemed to me at the time that would be one of the most beneficial ways of having a code. You just carry around a deck of cards. If any of you guys remember that system, let me know. Maybe it's no good anymore. I don't know, but it seemed simple. You know, your pigeons are pretty good, but they can shoot. Not being a guerrilla fighter, at least at this point, other than reading a few books, I've come to the conclusion that the best kind of aggressive warfare for people in the underground or whatever they are, whoever they are, is just spontaneous. The less planning, the better. And that's what you see a lot of these people doing, but these whack jobs are doing. But imagine if they weren't whack jobs and we were under more and more dictatorial police force, police state situation in this country. Planning something with somebody is suicide. But spontaneous eruptions like are happening around the country that are nonsensical but sort of anarchistic. In a real situation, and I believe the anarchists did do that back at the turn of the century. I think they were very effective. There's a couple of good movies about that. I'll try to find them for you. Anyhow, that's it for today. I'll be back with you tomorrow, and we'll see if we can't do some more BS in here. And if I didn't offend somebody today, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't say nigger enough times, but you'll forgive me for that, won't you? Okay, 14-5.
Mercy me. Three wise men in an SUV. Corporate logo on the side. Air conditioned quiet ride. Grease. That thing don't run on love and peace. Six gasoline, make that thing go. Now bring your heads up nice and slow. Take a sip of the land, the milk and honey. Sing and dance all night long. What you gonna do? Negotiation's just no fun. And it don't serve our interest none. Gotta turn up the heat till it comes to a boil. Let's go.